Welcome to Digital Health Talks. Each week, we meet with healthcare leaders making an immeasurable difference in equity, access, and quality. Hear about what tech is worth investing in and what isn't as we focus on the innovations that deliver. Join Megan Antonelli, Janae Sharp, and Shahid Shah for a weekly No BS deep dive on what's really making an impact in healthcare.
Hi, welcome to Digital Health Talks. This is Megan Antonelli, CEO of Health Impact Live. Today, I have the pleasure of reconnecting with someone I haven't spoken to in almost 30 years, my fellow Vassar alumna, Danielle Wiley, founder and CEO of Sway Group. Danielle and I were at Vassar 30 years ago. I have to keep saying it because I can't believe it. Back when the internet access was an Ethernet cable and cell phones barely existed, and we certainly didn't have them. Thank God. And the closest we had to social media was the freshman Facebook, which was a bound paper book with all of our faces in it. Since founding Sway Group in 2011, Danielle has built one of the industry's most respected influencer marketing agencies, connecting brands with authentic creators while maintaining ethical standards that many platforms seem to have forgotten. Sway Group manages a vast network of influencers across multiple platforms, specializing in creating high-impact campaigns that actually deliver results, not just vanity metrics. Danielle's been watching these platforms evolve from simple social networks to complex ecosystems, and now we've entered what some call a post-platform world. I'm excited to talk to her today about what this means for B2B marketing, particularly in healthcare and digital health. Danielle, so good to see you.
You too. This is a treat.
I know, it's crazy. You know, seeing that you went to the reunion, which, you know, is just crazy that 30 years has gone by because it feels like yesterday.
It does. It really does. And then it feels like it was just yesterday, and then you go to the reunion and realize you need your reading glasses for everything and your hips hurt. And yes, but
yeah. And things have changed, like the tree at Joss, right? The tree is not there, and you know, various.
Everything looks, and then the dining hall, which we called ACDC.
Yeah.
Now these young whippersnappers call it the Dees, which is so stupid.
That is so bad. That's just terrible. And the mug, how was the mug?
The mug, they had a return back into a nightclub and bar for the old fogies who came through, because now it's like a study area for these serious students.
Yeah. I just met someone from Vassar, or actually he hadn't gone to Vassar. He went to Riverdale, but I forget which college he went to, but one of the other Northeast liberal arts colleges. And he had spent time at Vassar with a girlfriend and was like, the mug. And then we were talking about Mark Ronson and all the DJs we had and all this stuff. So it was super fun, but it is crazy that it is no longer a campus bar. Right.
No, it's,
but we, little did we know how privileged we were to be.
We were so lucky.
I know. And we were lucky. It's crazy to think about too, even from a technology perspective. When I talk to other people about what they had access to in those years of, you know, 92 to 96 or whatever, 91 to 95, it was, we were pretty connected for such a small school. And we had a fair amount of, you know, access. And certainly there were some professors who were really doing some incredible work on what would then become, you know, the social networks and platforms that, of course, our businesses have really been built on. So it's kind of crazy. But tell me a little bit about your, you know, founder story from there to now.
Yeah. So I majored in sociology because at the time there was no media department at all at Vassar, but that was what I was interested in. They actually now do have a media department, which was started by my advisor, which is awesome. But I ended up in sociology because it was the only department that had media classes. So media and just community and connection and the broadcasting of stories is something that was always, it was just a passion point for me. So I grabbed what I could, where I could as a student, and then left, went into just kind of vaguely the PR and marketing world and bounced around to a bunch of different jobs while always just having this real interest in online, which was just becoming a, like, to give you a sense of how old we are, my first job was at a literary PR agency, and the book I was promoting was The Women's Guide to Online Services. And it covered such, you know, rock star platforms as CompuServe, AOL, Prodigy, The Well. So that's how I kind of learned about it, because it wasn't, we had a little bit of emailing and that sort of thing, but it was kind of like Linux based, like it, yeah. Nothing like it is now. But just got kind of dove into the marketing world. And as social media became a thing and as technology progressed, I kind of progressed along with it. After, like I said, a number of different jobs, ended up at Edelman PR and really built their influencer program from the bottom up. My focus was mom bloggers, because that was really the, it was what I knew. I had little kids at the time, but that was really the first group to kind of monetize their presence online. But none of these people started their platforms to make money, because that wasn't a thing at that point. They had started their blogs as a way to just share their stories and connect with other women. And as a result, they created this really, really special community and were sharing their stories. And some of them were just beautiful writers and just sharing stuff, especially, I mean, you know, as a mom, when you have those kids and they're teeny tiny babies, it's so isolating. It's so hard. People had not really talked about that before. And suddenly there was this community of women who were sharing their struggles and how hard it was, and kind of opening up their doors to other women to come in and share. And it just created something super powerful. And of course, as the sleazy marketer I am, I thought, let's monetize this. and so that's what we started doing for brands like Velveeta and Barilla and Johnson & Johnson, and really built it up. And one of the things I noticed was that it was complicated. Like I said, a lot of these women, most of these women started their platforms just to have a space to share. They didn't necessarily have a background in marketing. They didn't know the terminology. If they got approached by a brand or by an agency, they didn't know how much to charge. And then on the agency side, which is where I was sitting there, I was seeing problems on that side too. It was really hard to find people. It was hard to manage multiple contracts for a single program. I also felt like oftentimes these influencers were not being paid what they were worth. So, you know, you'd see like B and C level celebrities like a Tori Spelling getting thousands of dollars for something. And then a mom who arguably had way more impact and influence over her audience would get just a couple hundred of bucks. And so, you know, I wanted to simplify the whole process. I wanted to be able to help these influencers make the money that they deserved. I wanted to help agencies just better navigate all of it. And so in 2011, I left my nice high paying job and steady income and the agency world and started my own agency, Sway Group. And we started with 25 mom bloggers. We now have really diversified. So we have all ages, all genders, all verticals, and we have over 53,000 influencers in our network.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Having been a mom blogger myself for a short period of time, but right in that time, right? I mean, I think I had my first son in 2004. And then my friends all kind of started having their kids in 2006 and 2008. I was like a little bit early. And then, you know, this sort of the shift from, you know, we could just feed our kids anything to, you know, we all had to make food and we had to make, everything had to be organic. And so I started Sustainable Motherhood then. But it was just to communicate, right? It was because I was answering so many questions about all of that. And it was such a great way to communicate. And, you know, eventually I moved back to, I was also living outside of the city. So there was some isolation. So it helped me kind of connect that way too. Yeah. But then when I moved back to the city and my job became too much, stopped doing it. I still kept it a little bit going when I moved from California, but as it, you know, it's so much work. It's so much work. As soon as you get to that point, where you're starting to get, you know, there's an obligation to actually do it, it's a lot of work. And it's paralleled, but that experience has certainly paralleled to when we pivoted in during the pandemic from in-person events to virtual and all of the stuff that we had to do that way. And obviously now the podcast. So but when you think about that and you think about the deck, I mean, that's 15 years and we are kind of, you know, we recognize how fast technology has moved, but the platforms of which we have moved on, you know, now we don't really call them blogs, you know, like it's like all, you know, it's all different. Talk a little bit about, you know, what you've seen and how those changes have impacted both the market, but also just that sort of evolution of the influencer.
Yeah, I mean, there have been changes that I love, like from a like technology wise, we have such great measurement now. Like I'm not just, you know, back in the day, we were relying on monthly page views and Twitter followers and kind of guessing how many people might have seen a piece of content. And now we know how many people saw it, how many people saved it, who shared it, what the engagement rate was. Like there's just this wealth of data, which is awesome. The quality of content, like I look at my like now defunct food blog, I sometimes pull it up to grab a recipe. And I mean, it looks like someone took a disposable camera that they found in a puddle, like took the picture under a tent. Like the quality of the photography and is so much better. Video is so easy now for anyone to do. So there's some geo-targeting. We could not even dream of being able to geo-target content now. So there's a lot that's great about what's changed. Some of the things I don't love as much, we've really moved away from long form content to all short form. So like you said, blogs are barely a thing anymore. Now it's just a cap, you know, like you used to have a beautiful 1,000-word blog post and now it's just a caption. You know, short form video has really, from a sponsor perspective, really taken the place of those longer YouTube videos, which are just not a great fit for sponsored work. So everything's gotten like pithier and shorter and just like, right, things move very quickly.
Right. Now. So visual, so video centric. And that's, you know, and that's one of the reasons I, you know, when I saw a post that you had made recently on LinkedIn about the videos that are happening on LinkedIn and kind of the influencer marketing happening on LinkedIn, I was like, oh my God, I feel what you're saying. Because, you know, on some level also as AI is taking and we're able to create so much content using AI, that balance between authenticity and depth and conversation. And at the same time, you know, there's some really great places where things are happening, like on Substack and conversations that are more long form happening there, but it almost in some ways protected from the marketing a little bit. You know, they're monetizing it in a different way.
Yeah, with subscriptions. So it's not, I mean, all my favorite food bloggers I loved back in the day who are still sharing content, I subscribe to their Substacks.
Right.
Now.
Yeah.
But then
you have LinkedIn, which admittedly has changed quite a bit over the last few years. And it's more of a B2B platform. Certainly it is a B2B platform you know, where a lot of your work is done. But from our side of things for healthcare, you know, LinkedIn was very valuable and it still is, certainly for connecting people. I mean, it's almost more of a Salesforce tool and a CRM tool than a, you know, sort of content. It's all, you know, I'm at this conference and I'm here and it's all self-promotional as opposed to occasional. And there's some people who really do have great voices on there. But then this whole video stuff now where they're obviously paying people to just create the video. What's your thought on kind of where that's going to go and how it's going to go, either for LinkedIn or for the folks that are doing it?
Yeah, I don't think we can escape this move to video. It's, you know, that's just we'll be shaking our canes at it, but that's what it is now. What makes me crazy on LinkedIn is because it's kind of a little bit behind some of the other platforms for sponsored content, there seems to be this, what I see a lot of on LinkedIn are people not following the rules that we've come up with for all the other platforms. So just because LinkedIn is like a little bit late on this whole sponsored content world doesn't mean that it gets to play outside the box of rules that we have created for all of sponsored content. So the FTC guidelines, which, you know, are ultimately, I think, a very good thing that say like, okay, if you are getting paid for something, you have to disclose it. If someone is a, you know, if that brand is a client of yours, you have to disclose it. The disclosure has to be obvious. It has to be upfront. You can't talk about a product or service that you haven't used in some way, or if you haven't used it yet, but you're considering it. This comes up a lot for us. We work with a number of health insurance brands. So it's hard to find someone who's actually used a health insurance brand, but you can find people who are coming up on open enrollment and are considering making a change. So that consideration piece is a great way to not have to find people who actually use the healthcare insurance but are looking into it. You could do the same thing, like in your world, if an IT department at a hospital is possibly going to switch over to a new system, like that is a very difficult find. Like, can you find me the IT guy who's the system and loves it and is also good in camera and can do this LinkedIn post? Like, that's crazy talk. But what you could do is find someone who is in charge of it, has done a ton of research into what the needs are, and like do a consideration post that's fully legit within the FTC guideline rules, and to me is a great solution. But this is a very long way of saying that people are ignoring all of these rules on LinkedIn.
Well, and it's a really good point. And it's really about it's the intersection, right? Because until I saw your post, I had never even thought about it, right? And even though I come from the live event side of things, where certainly with medical education and pharma, there was always disclosures, there was always conflict of interest, and you always had to do that. And the lines do start to gray as you get to systems conversations, right? So where they've been regulated by that, you know, sort of CME protocols and ACCME protocols and what happens there, on the other side of where technology goes and technology purchasers, it is the FTC. But, you know, that conversation doesn't happen that often, even at some of the bigger marketing events. And so thinking about that, and as, you know, for me, right, so we get sponsorship, you know, sponsorship for events, and we, you know, disclose the sponsors, but we don't necessarily always match the sponsor to the client. You know, people go in knowing, but in fact, that isn't what we are doing, is saying, you know, you guys, you know, as a sponsor, you can come talk about your product, but it's much more powerful if you get a customer, right? And the client on the stage is there. And what is that? That is influencer marketing, ultimately. And it has been what we've done for the last 12 years. It's just, you know, and people in healthcare who are also very sensitive to sales, and, you know, because of that whole kind of that academia versus conflict of interest policies that many of them as physicians and nurses have grown up in that culture, or professionally grown up in that culture, you know, are sensitive to it. And so as we, you know, from a conference side, sort of gray the lines and then take that to the platforms, you know, we do need to be careful. For sure. Yeah. And that transparency and what's needed. And it's a really interesting conversation. And of course, then there's also the individuals who are consultants, right? Who are independent consultants who then are helping. But, you know, what are their conflicts of interest? Where are they?
Right.
You know, and that, I mean, it's a lot of it is just not talked about. You know, everybody knows.
Yeah. I mean, it's so easy to say, I'm a consultant. I'm not purchasing this product, but I advise clients on it, and here are the reasons I like this one. Like, there's this fear, I think, with disclosure that it's going to somehow impact the engagement and the efficacy of the post. And study after study after study shows that it doesn't, that consumers appreciate knowing that something was paid and that that honesty goes a long way. I think that's going to become even more pronounced as Gen Z moves into the workforce, because you have Gen Z kids. Like, I talk to my kids about it. They assume that everything is sponsored anyway. So if there isn't that statement acknowledging it, there's more distrust that comes from that than from the brand getting one over on them, because they just go into it assuming that there's been money that has changed hands.
Right. Yeah, no. And especially when you think about, and when you think about in terms of the digital health, or as we're going into some of these new platforms, like, you know, the Kardashians just got scanned with Pronovo or whichever. I don't know if they use Pronovo or Ezra, but, you know, those types of things where you're getting into health and health choices, and, you know, and not to say that, you know, whether you eat Cheetos versus not, or whatever other things that influencer marketing can influence, doesn't impact your health. But in these, you know, kind of big purchases around healthcare, that there's a lot of folks that are, you know, where the celebrities come in. And then, you know, like, you know, for whatever reason, we may be paying attention to the menopause celebrity sort of movement. I mean, it's literally a, you know, I mean, from Oprah to Halle Berry to and everyone in between and what have you, that all, you know, that this, but there's a trust to it, and they, some of them have their own products and some of them have their own, you know, advice, let alone, you know, the queen of influencer marketing, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow, who basically, you know, has just opened, you know.
No, no one likes to be, I found out a couple of weeks ago that at the ripe old age of 51, I have osteoporosis. And so my mom was like, oh, this lady at my pool said you should get this book. And I was like, okay. So I ordered this book, and it was like how to treat osteoporosis without medications or something. Within two chapters, I could tell that these people were trying to sell me something. And like, lo and behold, every recipe is like, take our supplement A, blend it with supplement B, and, you know, blah, blah. Like, it's now sitting in a bag ready to get donated to Goodwill, because like they had it said, like, I don't know, I probably still wouldn't have liked it, but I felt duped. And that's a terrible.
And that's a terrible feeling. Way. Right. Yeah. And it's right. And when it comes to your health, you know, you want evidence, you want science. I mean, I have sort of the opposite story in that. So Eric Topol, who is a, you know, huge kind of, you know, longevity, I mean, everything, cardiologist, you know, in healthcare. And he just released a book called Super Agers. And, you know, and as this longevity, the momentum behind longevity is increasing. And, you know, to some degree, I believe it's just a really good rebrand of public health, which, and prevention, which is great. On the other hand, I want every supplement, you know, if there's somebody who's going to tell me, you know, the snake oil works, I'll take it. You know, I live in LA, I want it, I need it, you know, but his book is basically a Super Agers about all of the evidence behind, you know, what works. And the answer is exercise and healthy food and not drinking. And I was like, are you kidding me? I bought this book, Eric, Dr. Topol, I thought you were going to give me some evidence around some real stuff, you know, or some not real stuff is what it comes down to. And the evidence just isn't there, but the influencers are there. And it's just, I mean, there's so much to unpack. We could talk forever about this, because even if you think about the influencers versus, you know, the anti-vax movements and all of these things that are really sort of controversial and not good for healthcare and medicine, in that trusted sources aren't coming forward, that this plays into that, right? I mean, whether it's, you know, you're hawking an EHR, you know, or a, you know, digital, you know, a ring that tracks your results, or wearables, or pharmaceuticals, it all has an impact, or, you know, NAD plus versus BPC 157, it all, you know, has a big impact. And so how it is ultimately going to be regulated, and how people will decide or determine, or, you know, and regulated maybe not is not the best way. I mean, it's just like controlled and suggested and recommended guidelines, but I don't even think there's an awareness of it.
Yeah.
To some degree of how important right. it is. Like, whereas in pharma, it absolutely is, where we get, you know, the farther you get away from medications that are put in your body, the lines start to blur, you know?
Yeah. One of the things I think about a lot with B2B, I think there's, in the B2B world, there's been this frustration that influencer marketing isn't easier and that there aren't that many, you know, that's why everything's on LinkedIn. It's really the only, one of the only platforms where it can be successful. Our hardest job as an influencer marketing agency is finding, doing that matchmaking, finding the right influencer to tell a story. That's kind of easier for B2B because you have your customer list. Like, you already have a list of everyone who uses your product or service. And like, that's a, you have, like, you've already done the hardest part of this whole thing. Something I'll give free advice, because we share this with every B2B client or potential client that we talk to. The best way to actually create that content is at a conference. So to set up a video booth, invite your customers to come by, like, people love being made to feel special, invite them to come by and interview them, ask them a few questions. You control the background, you control the questions, you control the editing, you control the quality of that. And then you can turn that into video testimonials that you run. And that way you're not hoping that you find some amazing influencer who happens to be a client, who happens to love your product or your service. Like, you kind of eliminate a whole bunch of the right. roadblocks that are there.
Sure. And full disclosure, I didn't pay you to say that. But yeah, no, I mean, it is, you know, that, I mean, and John Lynn, who is ironically the person who runs the Sway conference, but totally not associated, oh, two A's, yeah. but Sway Health. That's in fact what he does. Folks, you know, are, you know, the same companies that will sponsor our conferences and send their clients and participate. He goes to the major conferences and records video testimonials and interviews, of course, with their leadership. But the more testimonials, the more client case studies you can get, the better. It's always that. I mean, and it's been that since the dawn of time. And even in pharma, where it's super regulated, you had celebrities coming out and saying, you know, we used this medication and that medication, and, you know, always, you know, and that was always okay. So that's okay. And that's ultimately what people want to respond to. And if it's disclosed, it's fine. You know, yeah. I mean, people get it, yeah. You know, and people get that people get paid for it, and that's all right. It's okay yeah. to make money as long as you're.
Yeah.
We all need to do that.
We all need to make money. Yeah,
for sure. In terms of, I mean, I get super excited about kind of the numbers and the metrics, and you talked a little bit about, you know, how it's been so great to be able to track. What do you see as, you know, where things are going with that, particularly now? I mean, are there some, you know, platforms or tools that are just more, you know, that are amazing and that are really able to kind of crack the code?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of these tools are kind of the same, and it's just who has the more aggressive or appealing salesperson. But like, it's just going to keep getting more and more granular. Like, the fact that we can now see the share, I don't know so much in the B2B world, in the consumer space, this sharing of content and stuff that people send to each other via DM, like, that is really a sign that something is resonating and performing well. So the fact that we can grab that data is really impressive. When we look at platforms, like measurement platforms, and analyze them, one of the things that we look for is, are they getting that data directly via the API with the social media platforms? Because some of them are just scraping data and kind of passing that off as real and accurate, and it's not. So that's a good question to ask if you're analyzing
yeah.
a tool. I think especially as AI keeps inserting itself
right.
into everything that we do, but especially influencer marketing, like, it can't, like AI can scrape all of the things and give you a guess as to how well a piece of content performed, but unless you're actually kind of going in and grabbing that data directly, it's just going to be a guesstimate.
Right. And to talk a little bit about AI and where sort of video generation is going and what that means for, I have some influencers or whatever Instagram personas, the first people that I'd like to say they're people. They were definitely people 3 years ago, but I'm starting to wonder, are they generating content using video now? Right. Because they can literally do it with they were a person, now they aren't. And I'm sure, besides all the things that I see that my kids are watching on TikTok, that there, a lot of this is video generated. How are you preparing for that? What does that mean? Or AI generated video? What do you think that's going to mean?
I think ultimately what's going to happen is the industry is going to have to police itself, and it will know. The platforms will know if something was AI generated, and it'll have a disclosure on it. From our end, when we work with influencers, we specify that that video has to be created by them, and it has to be real, and it can't be we don't want deep fakes. Mm-hmm. Our clients are not interested in paying for that. They're paying for real people. So I think until the technology starts to better police itself, I think as human beings, we have to speak up for what we want and put in legal contracts that people are signing, what our expectations are along those lines. And then also just be skeptical consumers and know that other brands don't care and that there will be some of this stuff out there.
Yeah. And I think, again, it goes back to the disclosure, it goes back to the transparency, and the more, authenticity that there is, the more, likely that it's actually real, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things in our last few minutes, we always like to focus on, we have a segment called Five Good Things. So we talk about kind of what's good, what's exciting in your world, sort of in that creator economy. What is exciting to you? What's the good thing that you're most excited in the next few years?
There's a lot happening with AI in this space that makes me nervous. So to your point, I don't love the deep fakes. I don't love the idea of robots taking over all of the creative processes that make people so special. What I love about AI is when it takes really tedious jobs that don't require any kind of special skill and takes that off the plate of smart people who can be better used doing other things. So in our world, we use it a lot for recruitment. So especially as we're recruiting younger and younger people, again, as you know, Gen Z does not use email for some reason. You have to like text them that you sent them an email. So when you're recruiting men and women in their early 20s for a campaign, you might have to find and email 1,000 just to get 50 responses. That is a very tedious job for a human and is not a great use of anyone's time, but that is a great use for AI to, like, you can give AI the vibe that you're looking for, all the specifics that you're looking for, and then it can go find these people, match them. You can send out a bulk email and see what responses you get. And it just takes that emailing 1,000 and getting 50. It takes that from a 2 week project down to a 24 hour to 36 hour project, which I love.
Yeah, that is amazing. And in terms of just the automation that's possible. And again, with work that we don't want to do or can't, and it's the same, in healthcare, not even so much in marketing and sales, but just in the process of the sort of data collection and connecting even with patients that has a lot of promise. Scary on one side, exciting on another. But thank you so much for coming on and talking about all this with us. I think it's super interesting to our audience who, the healthcare marketing cycle is very tough. It's a very long sales cycle. And certainly with digital health, where, a lot of these both have a B2B and B2C play. So tell our audience how they can get in touch with you. What's the best way to connect and learn more about what you guys do at Sway?
Yeah, so we are at swaygroup.com. And then if you just search, we talked a lot about LinkedIn. If you search LinkedIn for Danielle Wiley, Sway Group, I will for sure come up. I spend one would argue, too much time on there.
You and me both, but it is what brought us, it reconnected us. So we'll, you know, I have to thank it for that. It definitely has its merits and value for sure. Danielle, it's been incredible reconnecting and seeing how those early digital experiences at Vassar shaped your approach to authentic online relationships. From MUDs to LinkedIn influencers, the technology changed, but the need for genuine connection remains. And that's why we at Health Impact love what we do, bringing people together. That's all we have today for Digital Health Talks. This is Megan Antonelli. Keep innovating. Remember, authentic relationships built on trust will always outperform flashy campaigns, whether in healthcare or any other industry.
Thank you for joining us on Digital Health Talks, where we explore the intersection of healthcare and technology with leaders who are transforming patient care. This episode was brought to you by our valued program partners, Automation Anywhere, revolutionizing healthcare workflows through intelligent automation. Natera, advancing contactless vital signs monitoring. Elite Groups, delivering strategic healthcare IT solutions. Cellpoint, securing healthcare identity management and access governance. Your engagement helps drive the future of healthcare innovation. Subscribe to Digital Health Talks on your preferred podcast platform. Share these insights with your network and follow us on LinkedIn for exclusive content and updates. Ready to connect with healthcare technology leaders in person? Join us at the next Health Impact event. Visit healthimpactforum.com for dates and registration. Until next time, this is Digital Health Talks, where changemakers come together to fix healthcare.